Today is August 8th, 1977. We're at the home of Charlene and Daniel Bartholomew on Green Ridge Avenue in White Plains, New York. Continuing on with the oral history of H. Tracy Hall, who is speaking. I was talking about our old Plymouth automobile. It was a 1938 four-door sedan, gray in color. I purchased it from my brother Eugene. He and his wife, Joyce Hansen, were also living in Stadium Village at this point. Gene was going to pharmacy school. At least I think they were living there in Stadium Village. Mom would remember that more than I. I seem to have a time remembering who was in Stadium Village at the same time we were. There was George R. Hill there, who was superintendent of a junior Sunday school. I've forgotten what the arrangement was. This was the beginnings of student wards. Here was this huge development put in place by the University of Utah, I guess the first time there'd ever been married student housing on campus. And here was this university ward, which was the richest ward in the area in those days. What you gonna do with all these students who are now in your ward boundaries? I remember hearing some of the brethren complain quite a bit about these students who don't have any money, you know, are going to come here and be in our ward. Now, there was a, I don't recall that there was a separate student ward organization in that days. It was the beginnings of such things. There was a special Sunday school for the kids from up there, a junior Sunday school, and George Hill was the superintendent of that. And Ida Rose was the junior Sunday school coordinator. So George R. Hill, son of the George Hill who was superintendent, general superintendent of the Sunday school under President David O. McKay. We've known George and his wife Melba for many years. One thing I can remember at that ward, but this may have been in the years when I was a student by myself, unmarried. See, after working for Check, after graduating from Weber College in 30, I guess it would have had to have been June of 39, I worked for this Denton Checkets to earn enough money to go down to the University of Utah. Now, some of my friends had already gone on there because they could afford to do that, and I couldn't. At Weber College, I and some of my friends, including Lane Compton and Daryl Reeder and Vern Stromberg and others, took their engineering course, their sort of pre-engineering course. The reason for this is that you got to take more science that way. So I registered as though I was going into chemical engineering, and so did some of my friends. It also got us out of a lot of the kind of courses we didn't like too much, some of the history perhaps, and the general arts and sociology and whatnot. But taking the engineering course, you got to take neat things like geology, mechanical drawing and drafting, learn how to survey, take science up to your ears of everything available in physics and chemistry. But anyway, I graduated from there in what would have had to been June of 39. Then worked for a year and went back to school then as a student at the University of Utah, where I found out they had no chemical engineering, and the only thing I could do would be to take chemistry. And then I had to go back and pick up all these liberal arts things, including a foreign language like German, which I did and which I liked, but some of the sociology things and the health courses and other things I didn't appreciate too much set me back a little bit, but I made it all up by going to school summers and whatnot. Or at least, I don't know that I went summer. I certainly didn't that year. Later on, when I was married, I went to school constantly, summer and everything. I guess I didn't the following summer. Anyway, I lived over on one of the avenues, I believe it was O Street, with a family. A friend, Jack Barrett, who couldn't find work in Ogden, came down and lived with me there later on. Just a sleeping room with a hot plate so you could warm up some soup. And Jack Barrett was down there working for an electric sign company, Young Electric Sign Company. The rent was about $15 a month, as I remember it. And I think when we were in there together that she let us split it. It was only $7.50 a month, or perhaps $8 or $9 a month for each of the two of us. Had to sleep in the same bed. Anyway, during that year, the Elder Quorum teacher was a very wonderful teacher. His name was Nibley. Now let me see which Nibley. I got to get him picked out. Can't think of his name, but he wrote a book, one of them which I have, on Brigham Young. He was a kind of a historian. He may have even been an assistant church historian or something like that, for all I know. But his knowledge of church history was phenomenal. And he was the Elders Quorum teacher. And it was really a pleasure to have him as a teacher. Now, I cannot remember who the Elders Quorum teacher may have been when we lived in Stadium Belt Village, which would have been, 6 years later. I know that this man, who was an uncle of Hugh Nibley at the BYU and Reed Nibley, the concert pianist at the BYU, he may still have been teaching that. It runs through my mind. He taught that Elders Quorum class in the University Ward for years. Beyond that, I don't remember a great deal about church organization there. I don't even remember holding any church jobs while I was in Stadium Village. And that may have been true of a number of people there. I just don't know. It seems to me, though, that now that I reflect on that situation a little bit, we did have our own separate branch. And that Reed Burnett, who we knew later on in Schenectady, because they went to Schenectady, he was an electrical engineer or a mechanical engineer, and Verna May, his wife, I think that Reed was the branch president there in the University Ward area. As I remember those years at Stadium Village, it was study, study, study. Mom knew lots of people, and Mom will talk about people to this day, and I can't remember them to save my neck. But those were years that required a very great deal of study, because background in chemistry at Utah probably wasn't as good as it would have been if you'd have been at some other universities, and Henry Eyring and other new people were bringing in material that was very advanced, and it took an awful lot of work and effort to do that and take care of your family as much as you could. So for social life and church life during Stadium Village deals, about all I can remember is that they were enjoyable. Let me ask Mom. She just walked in. When we first were in Stadium Village, did we right off have a branch organization for Stadium Village, or were we with the University Ward and it gradually
worked in? No, it was always a branch. We were never connected with the university.
Well, now stay here for a minute. I get mixed up, I guess, because when I was there alone before I was married, I get those days at University Ward confused with...
Oh, you mean when we were at Stadium Village?
Stadium Village.
Oh, I'm thinking it's connected.
No, Stadium Village. Reed Burnett the branch president there in
Stadium Village? Yes, and that was after they took us off the university branch.
That was later, wasn't
it? The university branch was connected, but while we were at Lucy, it was with the university. That's where we went. We went to the university branch while we were at Lucy.
Yeah.
But after we get, when they organized the Stadium Village branch, I think for a little while we went to the university student branch. But then there were so many of us with so many kids, they organized a separate branch. And they put us in the university ward, but we were a separate branch. And they didn't like us there because we had so many kids.
Well, there was one other reason, one other thing, too, that just comes to my mind. So I try and search it for these years ago. I was the organist for the YMIA and YWMIA when Victor Beard was the young men's president.
That's before the war.
In a ward, in another ward, not the university ward.
That was while we were down on when we came back. After Shirlene was born.
And I don't remember the exact circumstances there, but I don't know that we went to church there. Did he just have me special coming over for MIA because he couldn't get anybody? I've forgotten. And I don't remember any...
No, I think that was the ward that we were in. Because, what was wrong?
I don't think I can remember having had a church job during the 2 years we were in Stadium Village. Is that right?
No, you didn't have.
You had one.
I had one.
Was I even a home teacher?
I don't even remember your being a home teacher.
I don't either.
There were so many students. And I don't think they had organized the home teaching.
Yeah.
They just operated differently. No, I don't think you had a church job.
No, I don't remember one.
I was just going over that with on our tape. And I decided the same thing.
Well, anyway,
you had to take care of the kids. When a woman had a church job that was a Sunday school, then they left the man free for Sunday school. You know, and you weren't teaching nights. You were just teaching in the department during those years.
Well, getting back to our trip to Schenectady, we had bought this old car, which didn't work too well, but we enjoyed that car after we bought that for my brother Gina. It's the first car we'd had in our marriage, and we just traveled places we had never seen before in our life on Saturdays and whatnot, up the canyons around Salt Lake and exploring places we had never been, all close to home there in the Salt Lake City area. Well,
you did all the driving, because I can remember you're teaching Mom how to drive when we moved this.
Oh, I should have put that on my tape. That was something else.
Well, we decided to go to Schenectady. And my mother, who lived in Ogden, up on Forgotten the Avenue, they'd moved into a white house.
In the fifth ward.
In the 12th, was it the 12th ward or the 5th ward? Anyway, they had moved into a house, I want to say Eccles, but I don't think that's right. Just off from 24th Street South on the east side. It was near that Catholic school that used to be in Ogden there for girls. And it was across the street from David J. Wilson, who I think was a political figure. Anyway, my mother held sort of a little open house there and invited my Uncle Aaron to come over. We learned from Uncle Aaron that his daughter June was living in Schenectady. And I remember that was an enjoyable time there. We sent our physical belongings on ahead via a van and headed for Schenectady in this car. Now we didn't have much money. And we had three children, Shirlene, Tracy, and David. And we tried to sleep in the car, and that didn't work out too well. And we stayed in motels, cheapest ones we could find. I was willing to sleep out on the ground on a blanket or a mattress, but Mom didn't like me out there, afraid the snakes or something would eat me up. But we expected the East to be quite a bit like the West, that you could stop at motels, but we learned that you couldn't. There were guest cabins here and there. The last night we were out, we stayed in Pennsylvania at some kind of a guest cabin without any heat, and it was really cold. This was October.
Remember the White House that we stayed in?
Did we stay
White
in a good
House,
one?
And they had the
oh, yeah.
Upstairs.
Bowling Green, Iowa, or someplace like that. It was a Bowling Green.
That was not bad.
Yeah, and it was inexpensive. Well, we finally made it back to Schenectady. Came in on Route 7, which was all lighted up with the new sodium vapor lamps, yellow, which General Electric and others had built. And it seemed like it was lighted up for miles with those lamps. That was something new for us to see. But we came into Schenectady. I think we arrived in the daytime, and we were really disappointed. This is the back door to coming in on Schenectady. At least it was in those days. And it was a dirty industrial town with litter and paper and junk all over the place. And we were really disappointed to come in and see Schenectady from this point of view. I left the kids in the car and went inside, I'm sure, looking bedraggled and maybe a little unshaven. And I didn't have very good clothes in those days. None of us did. And I remember when we went in to see this lady who had the assignment of finding places for people to live, housing was just almost impossible in those days. Well, I could tell from the way she looked at me, huh, what's this they've hired, somebody from the backwoods? But she was nice, and she arranged for us to stay with another family. Do you remember the name of that family we stayed with? Anyway, we stayed with this family for a few days. Very nice. He was an employee. Was his name Zabriskie?
Heck, I don't even remember.
It might have been Zabriskie.
No wonder they know us. This is it. I don't even remember that.
Anyway, a few days we stayed there. We couldn't find anything except a house. Very tiny, very poorly constructed, and very poor arrangement of the interior. Not even any place to put a kitchen table. The chimney was in the way. Our household goods arrived. They said it was going to cost us $300. It cost $600, which was terrible. We had them put those goods in this house, because arrangements had been made that we could somehow purchase this in a kind of a not too clear-cut deal. We got to investigating the developer and other things later on. We really hadn't signed any papers that committed us. We just felt kind of morally obligated to move into that place. But as we looked at that place and the price, which I forgot but seemed horrendous and was for the day, I'm sure, a terrible price, and the smallness of the facilities, we decided we just couldn't go through with that.
Right, in Colebrook?
No, that wasn't in Colebrook. Anyway, we succeeded in backing out of that deal. I don't know what we did with the furniture.
I don't either.
Anyway, not having any place to go and searching the countryside, we finally moved in with an LDS family, Sterling and Helen Barton, who were very kind to us. They had a big family themselves of three kids or so on a small home. And we lived with them for 6 weeks, sharing household expenses before we were able to locate anything. And then we located a house at 401 Bedford Road, which was a big house, adequate for our family. And we paid something like $100 a month. Later on, we found out that was against they still had WAR rules on housings. You couldn't charge beyond a certain amount. And the legal amount they could charge is only $60. And when we found that out, we got it changed to the $60, but at $60 level, these people couldn't meet their payments on this house. They had recently bought it from somebody and then moved out to start with. And so they were forced to sell the house, and eventually we had to leave. But in the meantime, a newly converted church member, Bill Heffernan, whose wife was Ann Heffernan, who was a building contractor, had agreed to build us a house for $11,600 in Colony on Vly Road. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we later sold the house for $18,000 seven years after first coming to Schenectady. We lived in the house on Vly Road for about 6 years. Well, we had to get out of this house, though, and our house on Vly Road wasn't going to be built for a while. And we managed to get into a government housing project called the Marion Avenue Housing Project in the Schenectady area, and we lived there for a while. Now, our Schenectady experiences were some of the greatest times of our life, our early married years with growing children and with other people in the same situation. And it would take about 10 or 15 tapes to tell you all that I can remember about Schenectady. But let's just say a few things that happened. We found out that we didn't know where the church would be or anything. We just took off assuming that anywhere you went you could find a place to go to church. It turned out to be somewhere around 20 families in that area who were church members. Most of them young men, either electrical or mechanical engineers, recently graduated from college, who'd gone back to work for General Electric Company. The president of the branch was Jack Hopper. He had a large family. His wife's name was Olga. We met in the local YMCA. There had been one of William Z. Terry's sons, Ike Terry. This William Z. Terry was my bishop when we were in the 18th Ward in Ogden, Utah. And I haven't said too much about our 18th Ward days. There's much that could be said about that. This Ike Terry apparently wasn't too active in the church when he went away from home. In fact, Jack says he can remember the days when he and Ike Terry used to drink beer down at some club. But Ike Terry was a very energetic man. He had done great things for General Electric. I had heard even before I went to Schenectady about this great man Ike Terry, who our bishop had told us about. Bishop Grant Lofgren had told us about Ike Terry. Apparently Ike Terry had gone as a young engineer to Schenectady, and they'd send him to the Philippines to fix some generators that wouldn't work. After they'd sent him clear to the Philippines, these generators wouldn't work. And Ike Terry figured out what was the matter with them and made them work. And this set him on his career in General Electric, and he held several high positions in the General Electric Company before his retirement. But he had moved from Schenectady by the time we went there. He apparently was active in civic affairs and was active in the Young Men's Christian Organization, and as long as we held purchase membership in the YMCA, we could hold church there, and we did. Had to clean up the cigarette butts and whatnot before we held church each Sunday morning. Following the war, there was a great reorganization going on in companies, great expansion, trying to get in gear again to make automobiles and refrigerators and everything else. Been a lot of scientific progress during the war. People in business had seen what science could do for the war effort and recognized that science could do a lot for just business effort. So General Electric, IBM, all the big companies were building brand new research labs, hiring hundreds and hundreds of PhDs and lots of engineers to work in developmental labs and in various engineering things. So we were caught up with this in Schenectady, which was where there was the central research laboratory for the company. The company had smaller laboratories at Pittsfield and other places for certain specialized things, but they were more the developmental labs. We were the prestigious General Electric Research Laboratory. We first were in Building 37, which was down near what they called the works, where most of the manufacturing went on. And we were down there while they were building a new huge laboratory at what was called the Knolls. The Knolls was on the bank of the Mohawk River. The laboratory was located on a former estate. And they used to say that the man made the money for this huge estate by selling pink pills for pale people. One of those like Liddy Pinkham's vegetable compound sort of things. Sell the public nothing and something that costs nothing for lots of money and get rich. To one side of us, there was already located General Electric's nuclear engineering laboratory, where they were, I think, working in those days primarily on nuclear reactors for submarines. Well, after a year at the research laboratory in Building 37, we moved up to the Knolls, and I was there for the remainder of my time at the GE Company. I was at first put in a laboratory with Bill Cass and Edward L. Brady. Later on in the move to the Knolls, Bill Cass was moved to a different location, and Edward Brady and I shared a lab for a while, until later on when I started to work on the diamond synthesis business, I shared a lab with Robert Wentorf. Now, in the days I was at Building 37, I was slow getting underway on some kind of a project. We were told when we were hired, this is an academic atmosphere around here. Work on what you want to work on. But it really wasn't that way. They wouldn't let you do it. I wanted to work on an academic problem relating to inorganic polymers, inorganic materials. It's an outgrowth of part of my thesis, the University of Utah, on that had to do with the nature of chromic salts in water solution. But the company didn't want any of that, and as time went on, it turned out their greatest interest was in a chlorofluorocarbon polymer. Teflon had been invented by the DuPont people by this time and was coming on the market in various forms. General Electric always has an interest in insulative coatings for wires, for motors and all kinds of applications. And of course, any new polymer that come along, they would investigate it for possible use in this way. They were very interested in a polymer trade name Kel-F, I think invented at the Kellogg Company. And as I remember Kel-F, it had, if you consider two carbon atoms hooked together, on one carbon atom there would be two fluorines, and on the other carbon atom there would be one fluorine and one chlorine. And this would be the monomer, and if this were polymerized, you'd end up with a polymer that's called Kel-F. There was a lot of work going on trying to coat it on wires, and they didn't know too much about its physical properties. So they wanted to know some things about this from a physical chemical standpoint. I hadn't been trained in the field of polymers, so I was sent to a school down at Brooklyn. I forget what university was down there, where I spent a week learning things about physical chemistry of polymers and how you can measure things by light scattering, determine molecular weight by light scattering, learn some things from viscosity measurements, and the other kinds of things they do with polymers. So I was assigned to build a light scattering apparatus. Well, there were no good solvents for any of these polymers. There were no solvents whatever for the material called Teflon. One solvent, and I have forgotten, there's a scientific paper of mine that I was very proud of back in those days, because the paper, which was on the solubility of polytrifluorochloroethylene in various solvents, it was reviewed by the man who, the chemist in the United States, Hildebrand, the famous Hildebrand, who wrote a book or two on solvents. He reviewed the paper and he wrote me a very nice letter complimenting me. Usually reviewers just review the paper and they're not known. You never know who they are. It's all anonymous. But he wrote a letter complimenting me on a nice piece of research I had done, which built my ego immensely. Anyway, there was one solvent that was known for this material. I got the idea that if you would go to a slightly higher pressure with certain solvents,